If you don't know what BIM software is, I'm going to give you a definition based off of the pluralsight.com's definition. It's a 3D design and modeling software that can help optimize the work of designing for architecture, construction, plant, civil, and MEP projects. So basically, it just makes design better, and it helps you make better decisions and improve building performance, which is honestly something that landscape architects and designers and everyone is looking for. Vectorworks offer such a conglomerate, multi-purpose solution to design. And specifically, it helps create sustainable design sites. And if you know anything about BIM or GIS, it's honestly going to help you create just a better design with better decision-making tools. Since Eric works for Vectorworks, I thought it'd be really cool to get to know his story and how he uses his love and passion for landscape to actually improve a widely known software. Not many people know that you can still pursue a technology profession in design. So I really do hope that you enjoy this interview, and it's a really easy and relaxed listen. So grab a cup of coffee, and here's my interview with Eric Gilby. Alrighty, so hi everyone, my name is Graciela Martin. As you guys know, I am the host of the Greenside podcast, and we are back today with Eric Gilby. He is working for Vectorworks, and I'm just going to let him introduce himself because that's the best way we can get to know somebody. So hi Eric, how are you doing?
Hi Graciela, great, thank you, and I appreciate being with you guys today. And as she had mentioned, my name is Eric Gilby. I'm a landscape architect, but my technical role with the company is called a product marketing manager for the landscape industries. So a little mouthful, but that's where my title is.
Nice. Awesome. So for the landscape industries, is there more than one?
There is. So when you think about all of the things that are landscape oriented, there's probably three major facets that we kind of face, but there's so many more beyond that. But the three major facets that we face from the landscape industries are landscape design build, and landscape architecture. And so those are probably the three major markets that we would recognize as part of the landscape industry. And the other ones that are definitely involved are like irrigation design, could potentially be environmental planning or environmental design. Anything that kind of relates to site design. I always like to refer to it as site design processes because you never know who you're talking to, and it's a really good chance that, you know, we could meet their needs.
Site design processes. Site design is actually the general kind of umbrella behind that too.
Sure.
Awesome. And so you work for Vectorworks. How long have you worked for them?
So this month, I guess, makes it just about 14 and a half years. I started back in 2007 in October. So coming up this year will be my 15th year.
Whoa, that's a long time.
Yeah.
That is a long time. Yeah. So, you know, I reached out to Vectorworks a while ago, and at the time there was a sales rep that I met up with who is really, really nice and who had this really great idea of collaborating with you guys. And, you know, there's no like gimmick here. It's just a simple getting to know what you guys do. And on top of that, getting to know you, Eric, because I actually found that your story is very, very interesting. And we were at Labash this year, and it was quite interesting to see what they were kind of like, the general kind of vibe of the whole thing. And a lot of the times the conversation came up of, it's okay if you end up finding another industry. If landscape architecture, if you find that it's not the one for you, but we're not going to get too much into that yet. But I did want to premise the fact that Eric has a really interesting story that I think is worth sharing, because as landscape architecture students, or as students in general, you're just trying to figure out where you belong, what's your passion, and how can you still make money from your passion and still, you know, it be your passion. Sure. Especially after almost 15 years now, you're at Vectorworks. Like, that is very cool. And so you have a background in landscape architecture, correct?
Yes.
Very cool. And how long were you in the industry, and what were you doing
So that's an interesting story, because when I started out going to college, I thought I was going to get into horticulture. I just thought that, mm-hmm. you know, seeing things out there in botanical gardens, public gardens, things like that, I kind of started recognizing that as horticulture, which it technically is, but it also isn't. But I didn't find out until I went into college that horticulture wasn't going to be the end game for me. That in order to work on public projects, I needed to get a degree in landscape architecture. I needed to get registered. And then I could actually work on those public projects that I wanted to work on. Mm. So I learned during my college years that, you know, that career was actually broader than I was envisioning. But getting into practice, so I started my licensure process, getting through the LAIR exam, whatnot, and I actually finished and got licensed in 99. So beginning of 99 is where it started for technically saying I'm a landscape architect, but I'd actually started right out of school working in a firm. I was a sole practitioner at that time, and we were design only. And so it was really kind of a great opportunity to do exactly what I wanted to do. It was really cool to see when you finished the program that you entered a career that was exactly what you had envisioned. And so that was pretty cool. So I had been doing practice in that realm from, let's say, 94, got licensed in 99, and I did typical practice until 2007.
Wow. Typical practice, you mean just...
Design. So design only and design build. So I was designing commercial projects. I designed some residential projects. A lot of the emphasis that I had when I was in design only that I really enjoyed was the public parks, the public aspect of where people were coming to sites and enjoying it, and they would go home. You know, it was just this realm of getting out and being out in nature, recreating, seeing the displays, seeing opportunities to kind of make a space for them out in public arenas. The last portion before I came to Vectorworks in design build wasn't too dissimilar, but it was very focused on community projects. So entry features, open spaces, street tree plans, things like that. That was what we were doing, but the company I worked for also installed those landscapes. So the benefit there was, you know, in many cases for us in practice, you wait 2 to 3 years to see your project actually get installed. But in design build, they're taking the drawings off the plotter and going out and putting them in the same day, you know, you kind of get spoiled that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And design build means that they have, I'm new to the industry. So design build would mean that they have their own, like in-house sort of a contractor that they get people building them from right in-house kind of thing.
Sure. And some companies are large enough to be able to do all the work without subcontracting it to someone else. But in most cases, those companies have a certain scope of work that they do in-house, and then other things that they do subcontract to other contractors that carry the work that are all part of the process. You know, like masonry typically was done by a subcontractor, but stonework was done by our company. Irrigation was done by our company. Lighting was done by our company. All those things were still things, you know, the installations themselves were done by our company. But sometimes we would contract for carpentry work, we'd contract for masonry, whatnot. But so the company that you're working for to create the designs are also installing them.
Okay, very cool. So you said something interesting that I'm kind of interested in hearing a little bit more about where the background is. You said you started in horticulture. What made you want to do that, and where did that come from?
So going back from my youth, you know, I love to plant. I love to plant, and my dad would do the vegetables and I would do the flowers. For some reason, that kind of started off with, you know, vegetables was his bailiwick because he wanted to make sure they were getting something instead of me just having fun with it. But the flowers were actually kind of helpful because they were pretty. They were, you know, giving some aesthetic value. But it was interesting. We actually started talking about the combination of flowers and vegetable garden and how they could kind of benefit each other, like trying to keep the bunnies out with marigolds and things like that. So there was this idea even back as a kid that horticulture was very powerful, that, you know, you could make use of plants and not only make people feel good from the way it looks, but you could produce something.
Yeah, so that's very cool. Where did you grow up?
In Ohio. So Northeast Ohio was where I grew up. Salem was actually the town. But once it was time to go to college, I had to move away. And I went to Ohio State ATI, which was a technical school, to get my associate's degree. And that was when I learned that I needed to go on to get my bachelor's degree. So I went on to Ohio State's main campus and got my landscape architecture degree from there.
Okay. So you grew up in Ohio. I wish I had like that kind of life where I could have gone to plant things and things like that. My mom actually was the person that got me interested in garden design or landscape design, because she would always design her backyards. And she had such an interest, a keen interest in flowers and all the plants. I mean, she knows it all. And I really wish I had started in horticulture, because when I go to work, the question is always like, what should we put here? What should we put there? And I'm like, this, I don't know. So that's always so helpful to have that background with you. And especially too, it sounds like it ties to kind of like very happy childhood memories for you.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think, since we're kind of on this topic about career choices and, you know, where things end up, one of the things that we learned from our program at Ohio State was that if you planned on staying put in that area where you were learning, then it made sense to get to know the plants for that area. So Understanding the horticulture for the region you're practicing in is extremely important. But if you knew, or you kind of had a rambling soul that you knew you were going to move somewhere, then getting to know the plants from where you were initially learning wasn't so crucial, but understanding plant processes or, you know, scale and balance and all those kind of things, evergreen versus deciduous, all those things were important, but actually getting to know horticultural varieties was not as important until you were at the place where you wanted to practice. Then you need to get to know the plants from that area. You know, that was the one thing that was kind of interesting. I wouldn't have traded my background in horticulture for anything, because it really gave me a benefit even when I was in the program, understanding what I was doing with the plants because I knew them. Whereas many of the other students only got like one class in horticulture or plants. Yeah. But that was for a purpose, because they knew that the students likely would be moving somewhere else. So I would say that if someone knew that they were going to stay put, get to know those plants. But if you know that you're going to be out and about, regions are not going to be specific yet, just wait till you know where you're going to land.
Yeah. Can you remind me where you went to school again?
At Ohio State.
Ohio State. Okay. So You're familiar with the landscape there then, when you started school and everything. And did you intend to stay?
I did.
You did.
I did not expect to be moving out of state. I expected to be practicing in Ohio, Central Ohio. That was my game.
Yep. Yeah. And are you still there?
No, I actually have moved to Maryland for this job with Vectorworks. And it was an opportunity to kind of continue with my expertise in landscape architecture, but in a totally different vein. So I'm not doing the typical designs that I was doing when I was in Ohio. Sometimes I'll do some things on the side, but for the most part, my main practice right now is the design software.
Design software. Gotcha. Okay. Wow. Maryland, that's a big jump.
Yeah, that was a challenge. You know, back at that time, I had three youngins and we had to sell the house and my wife and three kids and us just moved to Maryland to make a new start.
I lived in Virginia for about a year and a half and a little bit in Maryland as well during that time. Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I loved it. So what made you then make that career change, you know, from design build, landscape architecture firm, you found your, you know, you kind of found your career and what you wanted to do. What then made the change then to Vectorworks 15 years ago?
Sure. So in both cases where, because I've only had, I'm going to say three major jobs, you know, the design only, the design build, and now Vectorworks. And the change between both positions was really about the economy. The first move from design only to design build was because at that time, the recession was just kind of starting to take hold. There was a lot of challenges with mortgages back then. When I say that, it was like the mortgage market or the mortgage industry was really making it hard for homeowners to keep up with their mortgages. And so that started a lot of the things that we saw come into play with the recession. But it also impacted us on the commercial projects because people were foreclosing on homes and there was no longer the tax base that was helping to support some of the commercial or community projects that we were working on. And so I had moved into design build, which you would think, you know, residential would have been sluggish then too, but it wasn't. It was actually going gangbusters, but that didn't last for very long. I would say by 2006, we started to see a lot of changes in the dynamic. People were being let go. And then by 2007 in Ohio, there was just no more room for people doing landscape anything. It was just the discretionary income was not to be had. So I knew then that if I was going to do anything landscape, that I had to leave Ohio. And so I started looking elsewhere. And when I found some positions here in Maryland, they were still hiring. And so I applied for a few here, and Vectorworks was one of the first ones that came to life and interviewed and got the job. So moved here.
Wow. And what were you applying for? What position, the same position that you have now?
So it was described as the landscape architecture industry specialist. So again, another mouthful.
Yeah,
but
wow.
Really, it was this idea of employing the expertise of landscape architecture as an industry specialist. So my role has been to support three different kind of aspects of Vectorworks. One was the sales team, helping to inform prospect clients about what Vectorworks is and why it's a benefit to them and show them. You know, we would demonstrate software. Another role was to help with the marketing team to kind of frame messaging. So when we're talking to my colleagues, what does that message need to say? What should it include? Why do we want to say this but not say that? So using industry expertise and understanding of communication skills to kind of help frame messaging visually and by text.
Oh, wow.
And then we also work with the developers to help make sure that those tools are doing what they need to be doing for our industries. So as we develop new tools or as we enhance the ones we already have, we think about what our users are expected to do with the software, and we want to make sure that the software is doing exactly what they need.
Right. Yeah. And you need a specialist. You need an expert to know what the industry is up to in a way.
Well, and at that time it was the only one that was going on. Like, you know, I was the first industry specialist they hired for the landscape side. They had hired an architecture industry specialist. They already had some architects within the company, and they also had entertainment specialists who were from the industry for the entertainment side. But since then, the company's brought on more. You know, we've got other specialists within the company that are from the industry, and that's been fantastic because I'm not the lone voice. You know, we have a bunch of colleagues within the company that can speak for the industry.
That's awesome. That's great. So when you were transitioning to something totally new, but not too far out, I guess, what sort of challenges did you face in that transition?
Yeah, it's a great question, because when you're so used to being in practice and doing what everybody expects you to be doing in practice, you start to think that anything different from that is not what people would recognize as being practice. They would say, you move to the vendor side, you're no longer one of us. We might second guess things that you have to say to us because we think there's an ulterior motive to selling software. There's another aspect of, you know, if you're speaking to us in an educational session, might you be selling to us? You know, those kind of questions always kind of came about. And it was interesting because I had that fear. I felt like, you know, even though I was a very involved ASLA member, as a student, I was an ALCA member, which was for contractors. And then eventually when I came to Vectorworks and I learned about these associations that had evolved and became about, I started joining these associations to really dig in to make sure I stayed connected to the industry. You know, because if I had joined or if I became a participant at Vectorworks and no longer listened to what the industry was up to, I was going to run out of steam. I would not really be aware of what the industry is up to. So I joined the associations just like I had when I was in Ohio, and staying involved with the associations and actually, you know, being supported by the associations well enough to move up in leadership positions really not only kept me involved with the industry, kept me aware of what the industry was up to and where it was going, but it also helped me realize that my new aspect of practice wasn't out of the industry. It wasn't like I moved from landscape architecture to vendorhood. You know, it's that I became a landscape architect who works for the technology side of the industry. And being able to see it that way, it was really helpful. And I had a lot of people in these associations who encouraged me to think about it that way, because I was very vocal about my concerns. I was, you know, fearful that people would see me differently, and they embraced it and said, nope, you're still in the industry and you're right where we need you to be. We need you on the technology side, and we need the technology to do what we need it to do. So thank you. So those encouragements along the way were really helpful, because you can get, you know, when you change a career like that, you can really second guess a lot and you can overthink a lot. And so having your colleagues and peers support you and embrace you and celebrate, you know, is really important.
Yeah. Especially when you think, when you do think that there are certain expectations to be had, when you have a landscape architect, you know, kind of title there, it's like, there seems to be this one idea where you have to do exactly that. And that's the only thing you have, is to be a landscape architect, and you're going to be working for a firm, and you're going to be doing ABC, you know? So I definitely think that that's really helpful for students to know that if you do plan to pursue this industry and be a landscape architect, be a landscape designer, whatever it is, you don't necessarily have to have landscape architect working for this firm. It could be you're working in this side of the industry or that side of the industry, or there's just so many. That's what I love about landscape architecture as well, is that there's just so many possibilities that you could just dive into and learn. And I think that the technology side, especially, or the software side, is something that's somewhat of an untapped market, because I don't think people really know or understand how, like, for example, I've always heard architects or architecture kind of being a part of the technology industry, you know, 3D printing and using all this software, but it's actually really cool that landscape architecture could also be involved in there as well. And, you know, the work that you guys are doing is definitely a part of that. It's definitely being, it's advancing that technology for us to be able to utilize and help with our workflow and things like that. And I'm sure a lot of other cool things could be coming out of this, you know, that you could be a part of as well.
It is. In fact, when I meet with students, it's interesting that sometimes students come, they're like getting ready to graduate, and they already know before they graduate, this isn't really what they want to do. They finished the degree, but it isn't exactly what they wanted to do. But they like the industry and they want to kind of stay close. Like, what opportunities are available in an adjacent or a parallel, you know, aspect? And technology can certainly be a home for them. We've talked probably a few times to some students who just want to sell. Like, you know, there's opportunities to sell to our industry. You know, we there's a technical term called business development. Being a business developer, you know, by selling and being connected with people in a more sales aspect, you know, even thinking about the aspect of commissions and things like that, you know, commission-based sales, that sounds really exciting because it sounds very lucrative, but I want to be in the industry too. So how do I do that? So there's a way to do that. These companies that offer products and services to the industry have those availabilities. You could be a marketer, you could be a business rep, you could be a industry specialist, you know, all those things are very possible. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a hard and fast definition of what that means. You can always investigate. It's always a possibility to kind of take a look at what seems to be available and maybe reinvent it a little bit.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. And it sounds like Vectorworks offers a lot of different things to be involved in, you know, for sales, technology, and industry expert, all that
we stuff. Do. I mean, it's besides just what we talk about within the landscape industry side of things, we do offer internships. So students do come to the company or work remotely, and they work on projects for us. We just had a student in from Morgan State University this last fall who worked with a design build demonstration file for us. So he learned as he was going on this process of building a file, because he knew how to use Vectorworks, but there were some aspects he didn't know. So he learned while he was doing it. And we have a demonstration file now that we can, you know, share with design build customers. Cool. Those kind of things can happen. We also have other internships with adjacent things like marketing interns, sales interns, accounting interns, development interns. So people are interested in coding, or developing software. You know, it's like you like landscape architecture, but now you just realize that coding is your calling. There's a place for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it kind of makes me feel a little better about, because sometimes even too, we even talked about it before this, there's so much room for, you know, doing something creative and doing something that's different and doing something that is not necessarily the typical path, but you end up finding that process of finding what you wanted to do. You end up actually learning a lot of things that you don't actually end up doing for the rest of your life, but that help a lot in what you like to do. Like for me, podcasting, I didn't know when I was doing my projects, I'm not like the best designer out there, but I love presenting. And so it was a struggle for me to design and use, and I had a Mac, so I didn't have all the tools accessible to me, unfortunately, which I hear Vectorworks does use Mac, so that's great. But I didn't have a lot of tools available to me, so I had no idea that podcasting was an outlet for me to at least try out and see if I like. And turns out, like, it's something that I absolutely love and that I had been kind of doing already as part of the process of finding what it is that I like, you know? And so with Vectorworks, or even with internships and things like that, which I think is a really great way to find out if you like something or not, you know, that is super crucial to helping you get to the process. And so with that intern, I mean, who would have thought, right, that he would be able to help and support Vectorworks, but then also provide something like that. I'm sure he didn't even realize he was going to use that, you know?
Yeah, it's an opportunity for career discovery. It's an opportunity for career expansion, or at least broadening your views. I mean, I still remember when I was in school thinking about the historic preservation side of landscape architecture. But it wasn't until I had a chance to kind of be exposed to some of those professionals and some of the projects that were going on that I realized, you know, it does excite me. It kind of gives me, you know, a good feel to see how historic sites can be preserved. But I realized that wasn't the direction I wanted to head. And that was okay. Like, I can still celebrate and embrace that side of the industry. But if I was never exposed to it, I would never know. So that opportunity to kind of get exposed, and I'm thankful for the professionals who did that effort to kind of expose me to those people and those projects and things like that. But that was what it took. You had to be exposed or else you just never knew.
Yeah, absolutely. You had to be exposed. I love that. So now being in this part of the industry, like we said, what's changing in the landscape architecture field? And how has Vectorworks been a help to it? And what's new? What's developing right now? What are you guys learning about the industry? And how is that helping you guys move forward? It's a big question, but...
Yeah, I was going to say great questions because there's a few things there, but I think it's great to kind of tie it all together. Yeah. You know, when I came to Vectorworks in 2007, they were speaking a lot about BIM for the architecture market. And when I started to really dig into what Vectorworks was capable of, I started to realize, well, now that I know what BIM means, because when I was practicing, we weren't talking about it. But now that I heard this and I know kind of what this is about, it's like Vectorworks Landmark does BIM, but it's for the site. So maybe we should call that site information modeling or landscape information modeling or something related, because it's really the same idea. But it really has kind of taken on hold with the landscape architecture, especially landscape architecture, I should say. Landscape design and design build are kind of recognizing this, but not necessarily to the same extent as landscape architecture. We in the landscape architecture industry are feeling the pressure to do this because of the architects or because of the clients who are now expecting BIM. So we recognized that for many years, Vectorworks Landmark was already doing BIM for the landscape. We weren't really marketing that, but we are now. You know, we've been marketing BIM in the landscape for a few years now, but at the same time, you know, many of our practitioners were already doing it. So it's a great opportunity for us to show people who are thinking about BIM in the landscape, well, this is how it's done. This is what our practitioners are already doing to do BIM in the landscape. But we also have a lot of stories of firms who have just switched and now they're finding successes in BIM in the landscape. the idea of BIM in the landscape is important because you're working with information and you're working with a model, you know, something that represents kind of like a digital twin of your project. And you've got this ability to test out your ideas before they get to construction documents. This idea of being able to work with smart objects, plan objects, landscape areas, hardscapes, terrain model, wall mm-hmm. objects, things like that, that we typically would just be drawing in lines or model in 3D. Well, now it's one and the same. They're 2D objects and they're 3D objects, and they have data built into it. And they know what they're built out of, you know, the components to each of those objects. That was really important because as we move to the next thing that I was going to talk about, which is, you know, better performing landscapes, environmental stewardship, sustainable site design, you can do it easier with smart objects because now those smart objects help you to analyze. So as you create a virtual duplicate of your project in your design software, you know, using Vectorworks, or if you're using other ones, Vectorworks makes it easier because it's already landscape specific, but it helps you to understand what you expect to be doing to the site and how the site's going to respond. Mm. Are you using the right plants for the area? Are you draining the surface the way that it should be? Are you holding water? Are you allowing things to permeate? Are you aiding with solar reflectance and urban heline effect? Are you making sure that erosion isn't taking place? You know, there's a lot of aspects that the software can be a benefit to, and it's just going to keep growing. You know, the idea of what all you can do with software to help mitigate environmental issues that are going on is just going to keep compounding. And so Vectorworks Landmark really is a tool that helps landscape architects, landscape designers, and contractors to really do a better job at how they approach a site so that not only that specific site, but its impacted community is improved because of that landscape.
Hmm. So you mentioned BIM a lot. Mm-hmm. Can we kind of take a step back and define what that is?
So BIM, in its acronym, is referred to as Building Information Modeling. There was a hang up at one point about, well, for us in the site side of things, building information modeling doesn't make sense. We're not dealing with buildings. But if you see it more as a process, that's where things become more, you know, understood. Yeah. So instead of thinking of building as a object, if you think of it more as a process, then recognizing that your process of designing with information from an earlier stage helps you realize that by the time you get to design development and then eventually construction documents, a lot of these things were already figured out. So It does move a lot of the decision-making towards the front end of a project. So even if you're working with something that's at a lower, what we refer to as a lower level of detail. So we know that this area is going to be softscape and this area is going to be hardscape. We don't know what it is yet, but those are kind of some defined things that we might do in a schematic level. But then as you move to design development, those objects are still there. They can be better informed or replaced with something that was already informed to say, not only is this a softscape, it's a landscape area that's a planting bed. And the planting bed has so many inches of mulch and so many inches of amended soil. And oh, by the way, the top layer is plants. And here's what the plant makeup is on it. And then when you get ready to go into construction documents, then the quantities are known. If you have to change a shape, the quantities readjust. If the worksheets readjust, any of the analysis that's being done as you kind of evolve your project can always be readjusted on the, you know, I'm not going to say on the fly, but, you know, as every time something changes, you can see what the result is with your worksheets, with your plans, with your labeling, with any of the coordinated projects. So it really has helped a practitioner go from schematic to construction documents a lot easier because a lot of these things are being figured out earlier on in the project.
Oh, I see.
Now for the architecture industry, one of the things that we kind of joked about earlier on was it left little room for the contractor for change orders or for, you know, on project changes. You know, it made it harder for them to be able to accommodate those kind of changes because it looked like those changes were already, or those decisions were so hard and fast because you already modeled it. It looks like it should work this way. What happens when you go to install it? And it isn't quite exactly how you modeled it. Mm. So the tweaking of that to kind of help people realize well, let's just do some of this class detection. Let's make sure that our HVAC unit and the plumbing doesn't conflict with the rooftop landscape. You know, let's make sure that these processes are cohesive before we get to install. So every step of the way, BIM has really been helping practitioners collaborate, but also to make their own work more informed. So now I feel more confident with my landscape because I know that it's not going to conflict with the architect or the structural engineer's processes. It's actually going to be enhanced. In fact, the structural engineer might change the structure planning for a building because it knows that there's going to be a heavy landscape on top. You know, how does that change the building dynamic and how that's structurally engineered? So those kind of processes to make sure that everybody's working together makes the project better. And it makes sure that when the project gets installed and then eventually maintained, that there's less effort involved with maintaining the project, which means there's lower costs for that. And hopefully landscapes are more sustainable that way. Water is being collected and reused and things like that, that allow a project to be more sustainable. So I think the process for BIM is just continuing to evolve. It's going to have its effect through all of the industries, but we saw it kind of come to us from the architecture side, or we'll say the AEC side, engineering and architecture. But you also see it from the contractor side. So we're not going to get away from it. It's really just going to be embraced further and further. And that's why more now than ever, getting into a BIM workflow or BIM process is really going to be helpful.
You must really be enjoying this, riding this wave of like moving fast, because this is not what you're describing is actually far beyond what a lot of people and what a lot of firms are haven't really embraced yet. You're kind of in the front running of like, guys, hey, this is what's actually working, and this is what's actually going to benefit and help you in not only your workflow, but also in developing better designs, faster designs. So my first question to you is, which I think kind of goes into what would be helpful for students to know, or maybe young professionals that are starting in the industry, is how would you recommend that a firm, let's say a firm with architecture, landscape, interiors, whatever, how would you recommend they use Vectorworks? Do they use it with CAD, or do they use it with SketchUp, or do they use it alone? And my second question is, before I forget, and we might forget together, but because I know the first question is pretty loaded. But the second question is, how can you, let's say your firm that you're working at is not using Vectorworks, how can you talk to your boss and say, hey, there's this cool thing called Vectorworks. What do you think about us starting to use it? So we can start with the first question.
Sure. So we recognize that not everybody in the world uses Vectorworks. So there's going to be a requirement to work with other platforms, you know, at least to kind of pull in, let's say even survey and engineering files. Well, we may not convince every civil engineering firm out there to use Vectorworks. So what are they using? Well, in most cases, it's either Autodesk's Civil 3D, or it might be Bentley's MicroStation, or maybe there's another one out there. But, you know, ultimately, they're coming up with the site, the survey of the site, you know, things like that. You got to pull that in. You don't want to recreate things. So there's going to be an important part of interoperability. It's a fancy word that means, you know, you import and export file formats that aren't your own. And so being able to import and export with AutoCAD files, being able to import and export with Revit files, being able to import and export with the 3D file formats, as you mentioned, like SketchUp or Rhino or things like that, right. Those are really important. And so it is possible for a firm to make use of Vectorworks alongside of some of those other platforms. So if you were working in a multidisciplinary firm, like you've described, they might be using their tool of choice for interiors, for architecture, for engineering, for some other specialty practice. But when it comes to landscape, they could certainly make use of Vectorworks by tying in, by importing or referencing those CAD files, the Revit files, the 3D file format from Rhino, or the 3D file format from SketchUp, or you name it, you know, even point clouds and LiDAR mesh files and things like that. If you have the ability to start with another file format that helps you continue your process without having to reinvent what's already been done, that makes you more efficient. So the challenge is getting to know how to do that, because if you're only used to doing something with a general CAD application and you're used to kind of bolting on aspects of how things can work with that general CAD application. So now you've talked probably about 5 or 7 applications that are all part of your design process. You might decide that's a little too complicated. And so the benefit for tying in a Vectorworks into that workflow is that you might let go of some of the other processes, or not, I should say, other software that you were using. So some of that 3D modeling can actually be done by Vectorworks. Some of that CAD work could actually be done by Vectorworks. Some of the 3D, BIM processes can be done with Vectorworks. So you could decide to let some of those go once you get used to these new workflows. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to convert everybody. Everybody, you know, we'd love for everybody to be converted, but not everybody's going to convert. So it'll be more important than ever to make sure that you can collaborate with them. So collaboration means importing and exporting, and it means referencing files. So as people give you updates, you want to make sure that your reference of that stays current. But it also means doing cloud exchanges. So not everybody's working on a network system and some of it's being exchanged to the cloud, or maybe there's other collaboration software out there. I'm thinking of things like Calibri or Navisworks or BIM 360, or you name it, whatever kind of collaboration software you can envision, that's all becoming cloud-based. So being able to participate in the cloud will be more important than ever. So it is possible for people to use Vectorworks alongside of some of the other things. I would recommend, though, that if you decided that you were going to move into Vectorworks, that you don't necessarily stay hinged to any one workflow. If you see that you can do some of those workflows more efficiently altogether in one program like Vectorworks, you might let some of those other ones go.
Gotcha. Okay. And so
now, getting to know how to get to know a new process or a new software like Vectorworks when you've only known something, you know, you've only known all these other workflows, it all comes down to what's called training. And imagine picking up the software and not having YouTube to go figure it out, or not having a online tutorial to go figure out. You wouldn't want to do it, you know. But I still remember the day when I learned AutoCAD, and there was technically training available. We were either so busy that I couldn't get into training classes to learn AutoCAD, or sometimes we were kind of waiting for the next project and didn't have the ability to pay for that training to go learn AutoCAD. And so some of those aspects of learning AutoCAD were just self-taught processes, or calling someone else up on the phone and saying, hey, how do you do this? How do you do that? And being walked through. YouTube didn't exist then. You know, these online tutorial things didn't exist then. But here I was self-teaching AutoCAD. Well, the problem is I'm not efficient. So I'll just give a quick little joke story, because it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. The first time I ever learned how to do a brick pattern in AutoCAD, I did not know about Hatch. I'm sitting there creating my own brick pattern because it's what I know how to do.
No.
You know, and then maybe a year later, someone says, why don't you just use the Hatch commands? Like, what's the Hatch command do?
Yeah.
So imagine how much faster I would have been if I knew about the Hatch command before, and I would have known about it if I'd gone through training. Right. So those kind of things are really essential. Don't forget training, because training will certainly help. But in the meantime, you're just trying to get to know the software. Well, there's free tutorials out there. You could take use of the YouTube videos. You could take use of our Vectorworks University, which is its own site. We call it our learning management system. You could take it on in chapters. You could take it all at once. You could get into the software and play it on your own and then ask us when you have questions. But ultimately, I think training really helps to help someone get to know how to use the software in the best practice way, most efficiently.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And I feel like you're always going to be learning with something like this. That's constantly developing and changing and getting better. But learning the basics first and getting that training done, I think, is part of it for sure. And so when it comes to the young professional now saying, hey, there's this cool new thing, how do you get your employer or your boss to kind of consider this possibility? I'm not saying making a sales pitch, an elevator pitch for Vectorworks, but in a way, how do you sort of introduce this kind of idea without, you know, because there's a fear there. There's a fear of, you know, being laughed at. There's a fear of being rejected. There's a fear of, you know, are they going to really see the benefits of this, you know, kind of thing. So what's your advice there?
So a great story about that is, you know, the company I came from before Vectorworks, there were people in that company who knew about Vectorworks, but the owner of the company was very, you know, kind of off standing about it. He said, you know, everybody else is using this other workflow. We're not going to do something different. We're going to do what everybody else is doing. So that's a very expected response, right? So if the student or the young professional who is aware of the software has the ability to say, hey, I'm going to be using what we're using here, but would you mind it if I took a couple projects and just kind of mock some of this stuff up on my own time and show you what the difference is? Would you be interested in seeing something like that? You know, obviously there's some investment in time, but if that young professional knows that there's a benefit to moving to this other workflow, they'll embrace it. They'll own it. And in some cases, that's all that the firm really needed was someone who can champion the cause. To be the evangelist, to be the advocate, because otherwise, if nobody else in the company is really that aware of it, they're not going to embrace it. They're not going to champion it. They're going to be kickers and screamers.
Yeah.
But if you can say, like, well, look at this. Look what I was able to do, and it took me less time to do this, and look what you guys are doing. I mean, if you can kind of convince them and show them examples, that's when you win them over. The other thing that I think is important is to be able to reflect on the success stories that are already out there. So it isn't like you're the only firm that's looking at this. Everyone else is not looking at it. Every other firm, you know, might have been considering it at one point, but they haven't made the switch yet. But there's been other firms that did. There's been a lot of firms that have. So let's look at what they're doing. Maybe we might even talk to those firms and get their input, because that young professional can really build some other connections with these firms. And I'll just tell you, like, if you're getting into a firm that is that hard and fast set against advancing, maybe it's not the right firm. Maybe you need to look for a firm that's willing to be open-minded about their technology use, because it's going to keep evolving. And if that firm isn't really interested in evolving to the next dynamic of what's important to do, we might need to find a different place.
Right. And if things are evolving at a very fast pace, you know, and you want to be a part of the industry and you want to see what things are happening, at least that's really important to look for, is are they forward thinking? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what I'm sort of like, it's hard because I work for a great firm and they're awesome, but we're also civil engineering too. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of civil engineers who've been doing this for like 30 years. So they always get this feedback that's always like, well, we've been doing this for 30 years, like, you know, why is there ever going to be a change? So that's always like, that's always the hard part, is sometimes you do kind of feel like you're in a you're pigeonholed a little bit, you know, you can't but really I've seen, change, you know.
That's a great point to bring up, though. Mm-hmm. In some of these firms that actually have civil engineering and landscape architecture in the same company, and you might be a smaller division than the rest of the company who's doing civil, no one's telling them they have to change. They should evolve. They should make sure that they're staying current, or at least trying to get ahead of the curve. But at the same time, no one's telling them they have to change. You're looking at an opportunity to say, well, what about the landscape architecture side? So you guys are using a tool that's built for you, doing exactly what you need to be doing. You've been doing it for so long, and it does it perfect. It meets your needs. But for us, it doesn't quite meet our needs. It gets there a little bit, but it doesn't get there completely. And imagine what we could be doing if we got something that worked with what you're doing. You know, we interoperate with DWG files from Silvo 3D, but we also can do 3D modeling and visualizations and plant lists and area takeoffs and, you know, slope studies and things like that all on our own if we're using this, but we still can work with you and we still can work with the architects. Those kind of messages, I think, are crucial. And in fact, it's one that we even say to the landscape architecture or landscape only firms, is to say, like, if the civil engineers have a chance to use the tool that's made for them, why not you? Why not advocate for the tool that was made for you?
Right. I like that. that definitely separates it a little bit, makes you feel a little better, because it's like, yeah, I don't know what you can do. I mean, for 30 years, you've been doing the same thing for, that's a long time, you know? Yep. So even it makes you also think too, like, well, how are they using CAD? Like, you know, we have training all the time for CAD, all the time. And it's kind of interesting because how much more training can you get on CAD? But that just goes to tell you how things are changing fast. And there's always things making things faster. There's software that's making things faster for you. So I'm over here thinking like, well, have you been using CAD the same way? Like, are you still doing it the same old way for 30 years? Or have you taken advantage of the software that you are using and maybe making the most out of it? So even then, it is kind of interesting to think about like, wow, okay. Well, I mean, I know for landscape for sure, I feel that definitely it's an industry that's moving forward a lot. I'm not really sure for civil engineering. I have no idea what's going on there, but I know for landscape, there's a lot of cool things out there that we could be using that could really help streamline so much, like Vectorworks is doing. And Vectorworks has, you guys have like multiple different sections of any like other industries using it. How many industries or what specific industries are actually can use Vectorworks?
Yeah, so there's three major market industries that we face. One would be the architecture industry, and we have a product called Architect that faces the building design industry. We have the entertainment industry. Now, the entertainment industry is a lot broader than just saying entertainment. This is concerts. This is theater. This is studio, like recording studios, TV studios. This is event planners. This is hotels doing exhibits, or, you know, even exhibit facilities doing exhibits. There's so many different realms that are underneath what we call the entertainment industry that work with Spotlight. And so Spotlight is the tool of choice for most in that industry. It's the industry standard. And so there's a lot of people, if you've gone to a concert and you see the really great lighting show, chances are it was designed with Vectorworks Spotlight. If you've gone to a Broadway theater or any other theater production, chances are the set or the lighting was designed in Vectorworks. You know, so those things are really kind of cool to see as well from that industry. Obviously there's Landmark faces the landscape industries. We also do have people who use Vectorworks in a very fundamental way, or even mechanical engineering or product design way. So there's going to be people who make use of it from that realm as well. So furniture designers, product design, those kind of things are still a process. We used to have a product called Machine Design years ago. Those tools still exist. We just don't sell the product called Machine Design, but those people who design product design are still out there. And they still use it. But I would say that the realm of expansion into other adjacent industries is always on our horizon. We're always looking for other ways that Vectorworks could support, even if it means a new industry. Maybe there's other things that it could facilitate. In fact, with the architecture side, they're focusing a lot of attention besides the building design, but also interior design or interior architecture. You know, for us on the landscape side, we're trying to look more towards the planning and environmental planning side of things. There's other things that we feel like we could continue to be doing to benefit the overall design industries.
That sounds like a lot already. I had no idea that Vectorworks was also doing when you mentioned entertainment, I was like, huh, well, I wonder what he means by that. But Spotlight is that sounds really interesting. So that's great. I also wanted to talk a little bit about just here briefly, and this has been great. Thank you so much, Eric, for talking with me and sharing your story and talking a little bit about the industry and what, you know, Vectorworks is kind of riding along that wave, which is great. But Vectorworks offers a lot to students. And for example, I know, like I have here, there is on the website, by the way, vectorworks.net/education/education. And there's a lot to offer students to kind of help them sort of get a taste of what Vectorworks offers, and not only just within the software, but then also offering to the students, going from, you know, giving out to them. And so just a quick list of that is the free design software. So you can download a free, fully loaded educational version of software of Vectorworks, which is very much needed, especially because you are broke as a student. And I would have loved to have known this while I was in school. Sure. So now I'm a young professional. I have to pay for things now. We also have lab donations, which I've never heard of. So you can upgrade your lab by installing or updating the latest version of Vectorworks Design Suite software for free. The Vectorworks Design Scholarships, which again, free money. Why not sign up for it? Students can submit their best design for their chance to earn up to $10,000 and global recognition plus other benefits, which is, hey, take advantage. Mm-hmm. Take advantage, guys. Training for all skill levels. Get started with an in-class training session and keep your design skills sharp with online training resources through Vectorworks University, which you have mentioned already, Eric. And lastly is the recent graduate discounts. So that is me, a recent graduate. So get 40% off a professional Vectorworks license with a student T2 Pro program. And convert the 10 student files to the professional file format. So all that to say, this Vectorworks is actually here to really help out a lot in a lot of ways. That's what it looks like. And they're really, and this is what I like, is that you guys are really trying to bridge that gap, which is exactly what the podcast is doing. Trying to bridge the gap between student and young professional, and not trying to get, although life in general is kind of works that way. You get kind of smacked with real life, and that's how you sort of grow and develop. But I really appreciate the fact that Vectorworks is trying to at least help the student get in the know of what's going on and what to anticipate, and sure, even helping us out, you know, so that's great.
Yeah. And you mentioned the idea about the free training for the students. And one of the things I want to emphasize there is that we now have a certification program available. So right now, the one that's available is core certification. So getting to know Vectorworks from its most essential or most fundamental side of things. One of the benefits for anybody, even a student, getting this certification. So if you go through the process, you learn enough of the software to say, now I can be dangerous to do things, is that you can put this on your resume. You can not only sell yourself on the idea that you have Vectorworks skills. Let's say you have on the resume that you have design skills, you have modeling skills, you have rendering skills. All those can be kind of added in there as well. But if you were saying that I have certification, core certification in Vectorworks, so it's not like I just barely know it, or I looked at it one time and, you know, I clicked on some keys every once in a while. It's like, you knew enough to be able to become certified. And we're going to continue to add other certifications to it, so you can become more specific. And some of those will be industry specific, so that when you do go to market, you do go to find jobs that they see that you not only know it, but you're certified. And so there's a proof of understanding there. The other thing I would say is that once you get to know the software well enough to use it, if you're doing it in classes, share the projects with us. We'd love to see what you're doing. We might even showcase them sometimes, but guess what? We also know firms who are hiring. And I can't tell someone, you know how to use a software unless I see it. So if I'm going to recommend you to a firm, I want to see what you're doing. And if you show me the stuff and I think that you're a great asset to a company who's looking, I'm going to make that referral and you'll have a job.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's actually great to know. And by the way, the design scholarship, it ends in July, I believe, July 31st. So just FYI, guys, it's really good to at least get your foot in the door and show people at Vectorworks what it is that you're doing, and even see how maybe the software could be implemented in what you're interested in. You mentioned like public, you know, public works and things like that. So there's a lot out there for you, and there's a lot for you to learn. And especially as a recent graduate, I've been feeling that urge to learn even more, even though I'm out of school now. So, but that's great to know, Eric. And I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking with us and getting to know you and seeing all the changes that you've, you know, that you've gone through in your career, and also seeing how, I think what's in, what is kind of encouraging to me is that how the decisions that you made were kind of very, they're permanent decisions, but you've, you went from being landscape architect, working at a design build and design, and then now working at Vectorworks, and you've been there pretty consistently for almost 15 years. So that's really encouraging just to hear that you've sort of found your niche and that's working for you and you're still there, which is awesome.
Absolutely. Sure.
That's great. Yeah. So if there's any other last remarks you have or any questions or anything?
No, I appreciate you having me on, and appreciate everybody who's listening to support this podcast. I think that being able to recognize where changes of the industry are coming, you're going to hear it first. So these podcasts are really crucial to keep tabs of the industry. And so the fact that you invited me here to participate in that way is very meaningful to us. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, anytime. Absolutely. Anytime, you guys are welcome to come back on. And I'm hoping maybe to do some collaborations with you guys. That would be a lot of fun. And thank you so much for listening, guys, and have a great rest of the day. I hope that you guys liked today's episode. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a review. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at The Greenside Pod and check out our new website at thegreensidepodcast.com. Stay tuned for our next Side Talks episode where we discuss our perspectives of this month's interview from the sidelines. This episode was edited by Patricia Fabregas. As always, keep hugging trees and stay on the green side. Thank you.